Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us on this Father's Day weekend. Did you know that there's a sheriff's office in Michigan that can no longer respond to all the calls for help because they can't afford to fill their patrol cars with gas? This is a different way of defunding the police. What does that mean to you, your family, and your community? Something to think about. Well, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, you've got a number of really good kids. Father's Day weekend must be a fun time for you.
Yeah, it is. I even get some free stuff, Colonel. I've got like seven kids, and of course, they appreciate how incredibly awesome I am. And so, I'm sorry. I have to laugh when I say that out loud.
Well, that was a good joke, though. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, there are certain things that you say in your head, and you'll hear yourself thinking those things, and you just have to laugh.
But if you're ever going to get away with it, it's on Father's Day.
That's right. You know, I milk Father's Day for all that it's worth, so you should too, Colonel.
Amen, bro. Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to talk about the Sovietization of our nation. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, Ross Schwalm will discuss the role of Hessians in our nation's and our military's history. It's incredible. And Army vet Shad Meshad will present the National Veterans Foundation. And finally, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. We'll be doing this every month from now on.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, a recent cybersecurity report warns that the U.S. is unprepared to protect against an attack. Experts explain very little has advanced or improved regarding defense systems in this sector in the past 5 years. So U.S. intelligence is falling behind. The biggest issue is that hackers are staying ahead of the attempts to thwart them. With threats moving faster than the defense against them, the country can't get ahead and put adequate protections in place. About 40% of experts say our country is more vulnerable than in the past and getting worse with each passing day, and only 19% feel the country is less vulnerable than 5 years ago. Additionally, the country is more reliant on technology than ever before, which has raised the stakes in this game of cyber cops and robbers. Use has gone up significantly in the past 5 years, and the bad guys have more options and greater access to the country's vital systems than ever before. Likewise, as companies introduce technology, they aren't thinking enough about security. Anxious to recoup their research and development costs, many tech companies push products to the market without the proper safeguards. We also have adversaries with more advanced skills. For example, Russia is especially good at hacking and often targets American people. Lawmakers need to institute better privacy legislation, and companies need to put safety first when designing new products and technologies if our nation is to prevent cyber attacks moving forward.
I think it's safe to point out that our senior military leaders are not doing their jobs. How can this vulnerability be true if the senior people have the defense of our nation as their mission and take it seriously? This is crazy.
And on June 23rd, female athletes, parents, and advocates will join 14 organizations from across the political spectrum to rally in Washington, D.C. for Our Bodies, Our Sports. June 23rd marks the 50th anniversary of Title IX, the federal civil rights law as part of the Education Amendments of 1972, which prohibits sex-based discrimination in education. Title IX has transformed sports by guaranteeing women the right to equal athletic opportunities. Before Title IX, only 1 in 27 girls participated in sports. Today, 2 in 5 do. Despite this progress, female athletes are being sidelined in order to make room for males. Independent Women's Forum, Women's Liberation Front, the Heritage Foundation, Women's Declaration International USA chapter, Concerned Women for America, ICONS, Save Women's Sports, Alliance Defending Freedom, Independent Women's Voice, Family Policy Alliance, and several other organizations are sponsoring the rally to celebrate female athletes and to highlight the need to preserve single-sex athletic competition.
So how is this military news? Well, at the risk of making a politically incorrect statement, there is a difference between men and women. And one of those ways is physical strength and endurance. We've lowered our standards to allow women into the Army and Marine infantry and other positions where hand-to-hand combat and similar situations are a probability. Since it's clear that sports need to be segregated by gender to be reasonable, why is this not true in combat? We need to apply some common sense here.
Early June was tough on our sea service flight personnel. Just over a week ago, a military aircraft crashed in the desert, the third in the region in 7 days. First, Navy pilot Lieutenant Richard Bullock was killed when his F-A-18 Super Hornet crashed near Trona, California, about 250 miles from Naval Air Station Lenmore and 400 miles north of El Centro. Then an MV-22B Osprey crashed between El Centro and Yuma, killing all five Marines aboard. According to the Corps, the aircraft was stationed at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. Finally, a Navy MH-60S Seahawk was conducting a routine training flight from Naval Air Facility El Centro when it crashed about 35 miles north of Yuma, Arizona. The Navy said that all four of the air crew on board the helicopter survived, though one sailor suffered non-life-threatening injuries and had to be taken to a nearby hospital. The Seahawk was assigned to Helicopter Sea Combat Squadron 3, based at Naval Air Station, North Island, California. Although the series of incidents paints a grim picture, it is important to note that nothing seems to connect all of the mishaps. The three aircraft crashes involved three different platforms, and the aircraft themselves were based out of three different bases.
We Americans need to realize that the training our military does is dangerous. Our hearts and prayers are with the families of those we lost this past month. They were good men and women.
China's defense minister complained to his American counterpart on Friday about the latest U.S. arms package for Taiwan and warned of a possible conflict over the self-governing island that China claims as its own territory. The Chinese defense minister told our defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, in a meeting in Singapore that the sale, quote, seriously undermined China's sovereignty and security interest. China firmly opposes and strongly condemns it. And the Chinese government and military will resolutely smash any Taiwan independence plot and resolutely safeguard the reunification of the motherland, the defense minister for China said. China and Taiwan split during a civil war in 1949, and China threatens to use force to annex the island republic. Despite their lack of formal diplomatic ties, Washington is Taiwan's strongest backer and source of arms. And the United States law requires it to treat threats to the island as a matter of grave concern. The latest arms package includes the sale of parts for Taiwanese naval ships at an estimated cost of $120 million. In a further readout of the meeting, a Chinese defense ministry spokesperson quoted Wei as saying, China would respond to any move toward formal Taiwan independence by, quote, smashing it even at any price, including war, unquote. Note that China has refused to criticize the Russian invasion and has accused the West and NATO of provoking Moscow. The combative tone, particularly over Taiwan, is typical of Chinese officials when meeting their U.S. counterparts, reflecting the overall deterioration in bilateral ties.
We and our allies have complained about reckless actions by Chinese pilots in international airspace toward surface surveillance aircraft and said that they put our flight crews at risk. China has also challenged foreign naval ships at sea, despite bilateral agreements intended to manage such encounters. Bottom line, China is a serious enemy. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll learn about the role of Hessians in our nation's history. At ease, troops, take a break. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. There's a new coffee company I want you to know about. Freedom One Coffee is owned by an active duty service member and has incredible coffee options. They offer an amazing bourbon barrel aged coffee, not something you can get at your local supermarket. Freedom One Coffee offers 9 different options to choose from. They also donate a portion of their profits to organizations that help veterans. Use the promo code FREEDOM for 15% off your first purchase at freedomonecoffee.com. Let me tell you, when you buy a bag of Freedom One Coffee, you're not just buying a bag of beans. You're buying an experience. All their packaging is military-themed, honoring the sacrifice of veterans. As an added personalized touch, all of your Freedom One Coffee orders include a handwritten thank you card. If you want to support a fellow soldier and grab a great cup of coffee, visit freedomonecoffee.com today and use the promo code FREEDOM for 15% off your first order.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Sit down with your children and make a plan for home defense. Let them know that if shooting starts, they should drop to the ground for safety. If they hear breaking glass or see a home invader, they should notify you immediately if safely possible. If they can't get to you, they should hide until the danger is over. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. It's good for you. I love it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check patriotfoods.com. That's patriotfoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Someday historians will look back at the period beginning with the COVID lockdowns in the spring of 2020 through the midterm elections of 2022 to understand how America in 2 years lost its collective mind and turned into something unrecognizable and contrary to our founding principles and values. Sovietization is probably the best explanation of what happened. This is the subordination of policy, expression, popular culture, and even thought to ideological mandates. Ultimately, this destroys a state, since dogma wars with and defeats meritocracy, creativity, and freedom, the very things which made our nation great. Experts become psychopaths. They set aside their experience and talent and yield to ideology, to the point where society itself regresses. Here, the law isn't blind and disinterested. It promotes indictment, prosecution, verdict, and punishment on the ideology of the accused. For example, Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress and smiled. Peter Navarro was held in contempt of Congress and was hauled off in cuffs. So goes the new American commissariat. The common factor in President Biden's 2 years of nonstop failures is the Soviet-like proclamations of equality, climate change, and socialist redistribution that have ensured soaring inflation, unaffordable energy, rampant crime, and catastrophic illegal immigration. Playing the role of Pravda, Biden and company attacked his predecessor and critics as counter-revolutionaries. Biden rejected common-sense bipartisan policies that in the past have kept inflation low, energy affordable, crime controlled, and the border manageable. Instead, he superimposed leftist dogma on every decision where ideological purity, not real-life consequences for millions, was the measure of success. Hey, remember those top economists who swore that Biden's huge government borrowing, increases in the monetary supply, rewarding people for not working, and supply chain interruptions was no threat of inflation? Clearly, they ignored their own training and experience in loyalty to progressive creeds. What about the Stanford doctors who signed a groupthink letter attacking their former colleague, Dr. Scott Atlas, because he questioned the orthodoxies of Dr. Anthony Fauci and the state bureaucracies, who we now know hid their own involvement with channeling funding to the deadly research in Wuhan? Did they reject his views on empirical grounds and welcome a give-and-take shared discussion, or simply wish to silence an ideological outsider? Or how about the 50 retired intelligence experts who swore that Hunter Biden's laptop was not genuine but likely Russian disinformation? I mean, did they really rely on hundreds of years of collective experience, or did they simply wish to be rewarded with a Hero of Woke America award? Barf. There can be no expertise under Sovietization. Everything and everyone serves ideologically. Our military, especially its four-star generals and admirals, current and retired, parroted perceived ideologically correct thought. Repeating party lines about diversity, white supremacy, and climate change are apparently far more relevant for promotion than effective military leadership in battle. The logical result of a woke military was the horrible disgrace in Afghanistan. Military ideologues kept claiming that the humiliating abandonment was a logistical success and that bombs that killed innocents were a righteous strike. Afghanistan was to be Biden's successful model of a graduated withdrawal in time for a 20th anniversary commemoration of 9/11, until suddenly it wasn't. Pentagon decision-making increasingly privileges race, gender, sexuality, green goals, all over combat readiness, a fact known to all who are up for promotion or disciplinary action. Remember when we fled Kabul, abandoning not just billions of dollars of sophisticated weapons to terrorists, but with pride flags flying, George Floyd murals on public walls, and gender study initiatives being carried out in our military ranks? If a general during that debacle had brilliantly organized a defensible corridor about Bagram Airfield, but was known to be skeptical of climate change efforts and diversity, would he be praised or reviled? And wouldn't it have been nice to give all those weapons to Ukraine? The elite universities, in their long pursuit of wokeness, are ironically doing America a favor. For a long time, their success was due to an American awe of brand names. But now, most of us know that a BA from Princeton or Harvard isn't an indication of acquired knowledge or inductive thinking, but politically correct dogmatism. Universities' abandonment of test scores and the diminution of grades, replaced by community service and race, gender, and sexuality criteria, has clarified the bankruptcy of the entire higher education industry. Where does woke socialism end once accountability vanishes and ideology masks incompetence and malfeasance? We're starting to see the results with missing baby formula, epidemics of shootings and hate crime, hey, shootings all over the nation, spiking electricity rates and brownouts and gas prices and entire industries from air travel to home construction that no longer work. Everybody knows the status of our homeless population in, say, Los Angeles or San Francisco is dangerous and unhealthy. But any serious attempt to remedy this would cause the activist to be labeled an apostate, counter-revolutionary, and enemy of the people. So, like good Eastern Europeans under the Soviets in the 1960s, we mutter one thing under our breath and not another publicly. Behind all our disasters is an ideology, a belief that ignores cause and effect in the real world without a shred of concern for the damage done to those outside the political elite. Folks, we need to think for ourselves and ignore what we're told to think. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Colonel, military pay is back in the spotlight. The Biden administration proposed in its fiscal year 2023 budget a 4.6% increase in military pay, which would be the biggest raise in over 20 years. In fact, it's nearly twice the increase of this year, which was 2.7%. However, with inflation hovering around 8% right now, Congress is actually talking about an even bigger increase. Now, under federal law, the annual raise in basic pay for service members is generally tied to growth in the private sector wages. However, the president can propose to go higher or lower than what's called the employment cost index. A raise based on the index automatically takes effect on January 1st, regardless of whether the president or Congress acts. However, lawmakers do have the power to approve a raise higher or lower than the index or what the president proposed. The 4.6% increase proposed by the president actually matches what troops are entitled to under the employment cost index. But lawmakers and analysts have recently been raising concerns about using the index to calculate the raise. You see, it looks backwards, meaning it does not take into account the record inflation being seen now or that can continue into next year. And another big obstacle about going higher than 4.6% is the money is likely going to have to come from somewhere else within the defense budget. Now, the other thing interesting that's happening with military pay right now is the study of the current basic pay tables and whether or not they need to be updated to compete with the current job market. All of the military branches are sounding the alarm about the difficulty in recruiting and retraining service members amid this competitive job market. Bottom line, the problem is bigger than just pay increases. We need to be looking at the entire benefits package, especially for enlisted personnel, if we want to keep the kind of people we need to serve in the U.S. military. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Hey, thanks, Roland. I enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the role of Hessians in our military's history with Ross Schwalm. Then we'll talk about the National Veterans Foundation with Shad Meshad. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Start with 40, take a break, do another 30, then stand at ease.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Marine vet Ross Schwalm. Ross is the president of the Johannes Schwalm Historical Association and the president of the Colonel William Grayson Chapter, Sons of the American Revolution. So he knows a lot about our history, about Hessians in our nation's history, and it's going to be fun talking. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Thank you, Danny, for having me. This is quite an honor.
Hey, it's going to be fun. Ross, start telling us about your family's history in our country and your time in the Marines.
So Johannes Schwalm became a Hessian soldier in Germany in 1770. He was 17 years old, so it was his turn to be part of the Hessian military establishment. And the way they trained back then was they would get called out after spring planning, do some drills, in the early summer, and then go back to their farms. You know, after harvest season, they would have another muster in hopes of being prepared for any contingency that might happen. So this went on for him for quite some time. And by the spring of 1776, the British came a-calling, and they needed help with their little problem in North America.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. But the British used Hessian troops all over the place. They were certainly part of the fighting Napoleon. This wasn't unique, was it?
No, sir. I mean, it went. This was called the Soldatenhandel, soldier trade. There were very specific treaties that indicated what a auxiliary was. An auxiliary was in German, it translates to helper. And so these units would be mustered in. There was a treaty signed, depending upon which king you were going to work for, you know, either Frederick the Great of Prussia or King George II. In the case of the French and Indian War in America, he actually took a few Hessian troops with him to North America, or he didn't go, but his British forces did. And so this was pretty routine. They were not considered mercenaries. Right. Mercenaries were individuals that legally were just in it for themselves. These were whole units that had to come to America to do. And you're right. They served all over Gibraltar, as far away as India or during the American Revolution. And then down in the Caribbean. And Hessians being good soldiers like they were complaining about the heat and the bugs. So there you go. Just like Marines.
You know, I was just going to say that. Take a minute now and talk about your time in the Marines. Then let's get back to this.
Yeah, sure thing. I went off to college to be a minister, and I looked around and I said, maybe there's another way I can do, I can help my fellow man. And as my father-in-law would say, well, you're in the priesthood. You got ordained into the Marine Corps priesthood. And I became an officer my whole life. I heard from my uncle about George Patton, and my uncle was in the artillery for George Patton. So I joined the Marines. I felt like I was a duck in a right pond, you know, commissioned. We came time to pick our choices. I picked artillery and Camp Lejeune, and I got both of those. So I became an artillery officer. We were taking on the Russians, you know, Cold War. And by the time Desert Storm came around, I was a battery commander in 3rd Marine Division, and took headquarters battery, 3rd Battalion, 12th Marines to combat. And we helped liberate Kuwait. Grand fun. And then, of course, I finished up at 20 years. So I, you know, saw a couple tours of combat. Gave me a great perspective on some of the things that my ancestors went through.
You know, while combat changes, in a lot of ways, it doesn't change at all, does it?
No. So when I mentioned, when I study the Hessians, or I study my Union ancestors or my World War II ancestors, I'm finding very, very similar threads across the board. You know, they all served because they felt they owed something to their country. You know, they didn't like it necessarily, but they did their part. And my brother once said that he would hire veterans if they'd let him, only veterans, if he'd let him. He said, because they put up with a lot, but when something's really bad, they let you know, and they want it changed. And so I see that in my ancestors, right? That's what they did. They served and, you know, did the best they could with what they had. And so I took that with me through my career and tried to train my Marines that way. That was the best I could do for them.
You know, I have too also noticed that veterans get things done. Farmers fall into the same category. So the Johannes Schwalm Historical Association is dedicated to researching those German troops that you were talking about, typically called Hessians. How did that start?
So back in the 1960s, there were several of my ancestors that were pretty successful in business, and they were all independently researching to determine, you know, who exactly was our Hessian ancestor. I mean, is this a family legend, or is it the truth? And so they set out independently, and then they all got together and started comparing notes, and they decided to form an association. They were actually motivated by Alex Haley's book Roots. And so they said, and you know, he is credited with establishing family genealogy as we know it today. And so they pooled their money and they pooled their information in 1975. With the goal of publishing a book by the Bicentennial. And then that first book was called Johannes Schwalm, the Hessian. And they were able to confirm, you know, who he was, you know, his roles within the war and all of that. And so once the book was published and reviewed in the New York Times, that led to hundreds and hundreds of more people coming to bring their information, say, well, I had a Hessian ancestor, or I had a, you know, I'm a German descendant. And so that allowed us, that burst of information has allowed us to publish for the last 47 years. You know, each year we publish a journal. We became a nonprofit around 1978 when they realized that it was going to take a lot more money than they had initially put into the pool to run the business and help people with their genealogy and to publish. So we, you know, they formed a nonprofit, and that's what we do. All of our events are free to the public, and we sell a journal each year, and that's kept us going.
Hey, that makes sense. You know, we all know that most of our founding fathers were English, but there were a lot of Germans here too, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the Pennsylvania Dutch, right?
Yes.
They came here for religious freedom. Say, can you just please leave us alone? And they migrated down into places like the Shenandoah Valley, Maryland, and up into Pennsylvania and New York somewhat. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, they formed communities, right, around that. So you'll see people that came from Alsace-Lorraine, which, you know, at the time was French, but they had a lot of Germans there as well. And so my French Huguenot family came out of Alsace, right? They got chased out of France because they were Protestants. Uh-huh. So they were here before the revolution, and but they mingled in with the Germans that are here.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Pennsylvania Dutch. They were called that because they couldn't pronounce Deutsch, which is German for German, right?
That is correct. Yes.
So when you hear about the Pennsylvania Dutch, we're talking about Germans.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, generally.
Pretty much. And by the way, they're still there. They're buying up farms, which is really cool because, you know, 150 acre farm, you're not going to make a lot of money. But if you're just doing sustainment farming, right, that's plenty for somebody that's still doing horse-drawn,
yes,
you know, plowing and such and planting. And they've mingled into the society, and they're still quite prevalent in Pennsylvania, Ohio, out through the Midwest, even in Virginia, North Carolina. And then, of course, the other waves of Germans that came, right? Civil War, you know, post-World War I, you know, since there were, you know, they came here for better opportunities. And even World War II Germans, you know, the country was a mess and they decided to come to America and get jobs. And it's quite fascinating. It's the largest immigrant group from a single country still, in accordance with the recently released 2020 census.
That's so awesome.
About 43 million of German Americans.
There's more to discuss about Hessians in our history, and Ross is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it is push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, many days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Marine vet and historian Ross Schwalm about the Hessians in our nation's history. We're just talking about a huge number of Germans, in a generic sense, I guess, that came to the United States for all kinds of different reasons. Some of them were POWs from World War II, held here and stayed here. Some of them immigrated. Some of them, whatever. They're just people, and they move at different times. Not to mention the Hessians who were here because they were hired as a military people to come here and support, in this case, the British. How does all that impact our culture?
So as you may remember, you know, the British had fought in North America before, you know, before the American Revolution, right? And some of the expenses for that protection became taxes, and this became a huge problem for the Americans. But as early as 1774, the Prime Minister, Lord North, had realized that, you know what, it's a big continent. We're going to need help. You know, we may need Hessians and Hanoverians. So you talk about Germans. Germany did not exist until as a single nation until 1870. But I have been starting to refer to these people as German-speaking people from Central Europe, right? They were, Hanover was one of the northern provinces. Of course, Hesse was the second largest one. So about 32,000 of these soldiers actually served in North America during the time from 1776 until 1783, when the peace treaty was signed. But the traditions they brought with them were work ethic, right? Everybody had a job in the unit, right? Some guys were armorers, some job people made shoes, others made clothing. Some were just laborers, like Johannes Schwalm was a laborer. And they basically, what that meant was they worked on farms, right? They brought the Christmas tradition with them. They brought, you know, a very devout religious background with them. I mean, their motto was actually God mit uns, which is God with us, right? Emmanuel, if you look at that in the Bible. So those were some of the traditions. They did celebrate Christ's birth, and they had their own Christmas trees that they would cut down and decorate, you know, as a tradition. And that is carried on today, right? The Christmas tree. Matter of fact, a Schwamm farm family had the Christmas tree at the White House for Donald and Melania Trump. And it was quite an interesting feat. All these years later, they had a big tree that ended up in the White House as the primary Christmas tree of the year.
And recognizing all the diversity in our history is really important. And your point taken, that we call them Germans, when in fact there was no Germany until just over 100 years ago, maybe 150 years ago. But they spoke the language, it was all there. And it's part of who we are. And, you know, you made the point that English using German soldiers were here long before our revolution. Indeed, George Washington was a lieutenant colonel at about age 25 or something in the French Indian Wars. I mean, this is, our culture goes way back, and a lot of it is us working together. We just remember when we fought each other.
Yeah, that is correct. And one of the things I didn't mention was construction, right? When these guys showed up, they built things, right? They were very meticulous. They understood math, and, you know, the officers were well educated, and they passed that on to their troops. And so places like Hessian Barracks in Trenton, right? That was built for the French and Indian War as a base camp, right? And then the Hessian Barracks in Frederick, Maryland, same way. Well, then it turns around that, you know, Trenton became very famous, right? Johannes was actually captured at Trenton. But the Frederick Barracks for the French and Indian War became a Hessian prisoner of war camp. And it's funny because all those the prisoners that were there, when they decided to stay in America, they just populated parts of Maryland and Leesburg in Virginia. And there's still a huge group of Hessian descendants in Leesburg, Virginia. So it's kind of fascinating that they've stayed.
You know, and that's a reasonable thing. We're all Americans, but there's nothing wrong with being grouped about and enjoying your history, your culture. That's just cool. That's just part of America.
So one of the things I point out to a lot of my friends is like, hey, how many of you actually have your ancestors mentioned in the Declaration of Independence as a grievance? And they just laugh. And it's interesting because even back then, the intelligence, you know, the Americans knew these guys were coming, but they called them foreign mercenaries, right? And so it was sort of interesting how that phrase stuck with these guys forever. And that was the farthest from the truth. They were not mercenaries per the legal definition, right? They were actually auxiliaries. And what's funny is they complained that the head of a civilized state wouldn't be doing this thing, right? Well, how little the colonists forgot that, hey, he did the same thing for you in the French and Indian War, right? He brought these guys to help. So it was interesting. I have do many briefings on the myth of being mercenaries. Now, were they good soldiers? Oh, yeah. I mean, they were feared, right? The British would always put them in the center of the line. And who did the Continentals put in the center of the line? Well, they would put the militia in the center of the line to sacrifice them. And so the Hessians would just say, okay, we're just going to attack in the middle because those guys are pretty weak. And so those two myths ended up being quite prevalent in reality. The Hessians, you know, they wore the tall mitre hats and caps and fixed their bayonets and went right at them. And those are tactics that were learned by and taught by the Prussians, you know, Frederick the Great.
And those are the kinds of things that good military leaders are always doing. Noting what's better for their troops, what the other guys are doing. I mean, we're a little more sophisticated about the techniques we can use now, but the thinking, the strategy, it hasn't changed. Good leadership is still good leadership. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. We're talking with Russ Schwan. Russ, let's start wrapping it up. What are some of the key points that you would like our listeners to take away from our talk today?
Yeah, sure thing. First off, the Hessians really were very professional soldiers, very disciplined. They marched very slowly, which is, you know, it was a bit of a goose step But that's just what they did. And because they marched slowly, they had a lot more energy when the attack finally was called. That was kind of interesting. I think the second thing is that the Hessians, basically, they looked around places like Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, North Carolina, and they go, you know what? We don't know why these people are complaining, but there's some pretty good land here. And a lot of them stayed. About 6,000 stayed in America, and they became part of the society. Johannes, as an example, started out with a simple 24 acres that he leased, and he made enough money to eventually buy a farm that was 363 acres. And he was part of his community, right? He helped build one church, and he was actually the treasurer of another church. So they were very religious, very disciplined, and they wanted to help. They wanted to be part of their new country and help in any way they could. And what's interesting is the descendants of these guys, you know, like myself, I mean, we believe the country's worth fighting for. And we did. You know, the grandsons of those Hessians fought the Civil War. The grandsons of those guys fought World War I and World War II. And, you know, the sons of those World War II guys fought, you know, Vietnam and, you know, all the modern wars. And it's still going on today.
Good citizens are good citizens, and they serve where they're needed.
And yes, sir.
And they grow their communities.
And we're seeing that now, right? I mean, the efforts you're doing, the efforts of dozens and dozens of veteran nonprofits who stood up to back up, you know, the big ones, you know, like the Legion and the VFW. You know, I'm a member of the Legion and have been since probably age five when I washed glasses at the bar for my dad. You know, so I had it my whole life. You know, I fly my flag every day. And that's what it is, you know, trying to make my community better. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Ross, your family has a big Civil War event coming up next month, don't they? Tell us about it.
Yes, sir. We're going to revisit 1862, and I'm calling it the Sounds of Freedom, Civil War style. So I have a reenactor named Clara Barton, you know, Sarah Fay from Connecticut is coming in to give us a couple shows on what Clara Barton did in the war. I have several authors coming. I have a historian from Ohio who spends his summers at Gettysburg, and he's coming to talk about Stonewall Jackson fighting at the unfinished railroad. Well, what's interesting, my great-grandfather and two of my great-great-uncles were in the Union Army on the other side of the rock throwing by Stonewall Jackson. So it's very interesting. It's free to the public. You know, we always do that. We're going to honor veterans, you know, at our opening ceremony on July 9th at noon, and then continue on through July 10th. And I rounded up my cousins who are part of a Civil War reenactment artillery battery, and they're going to shoot some cannons for us. And so it should be a fun weekend, the second weekend of July, because the Farmers' Almanac says it don't rain that weekend.
Where will it be, and how can people learn more about it?
Right. They can go to www.jsha.org. We should be posting things up there. And I just started a Facebook page last week. You can search for Johannes Schwamm Historical Association, and I posted up the event there. Yeah, it's in Valley View, Pennsylvania, which is up in beautiful Higgins Valley, right there in central Pennsylvania, where the Appalachians run east-west there for a little while. And it's very, very nice. It's in beautiful country, that's for sure.
That sounds cool. Ross, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for service to our nation. While you're in uniform and in preserving our history, I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour learning about the National Veterans Foundation with Army vet Chad Meshad. Then retired General Chris Petty will share the battle of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag military history and our Armed America report. Truth, I'm not fond of pain, and I absolutely won't use addicting products. That's why I can recommend Day 3 Creation products if you're in pain. Use the code FREEDOM when you order at day3creation.com. Save 20%. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for Jumpin' Jacks. Do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water. Finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.